Imagine you're like 30 years old. You're lying in bed, staring at the ceiling, and you just cannot sleep.
Oh, right, because of that, what do they call it?
Yeah, lightning brain.
Right.
It's this relentless, uncontrollable overthinking that just won't shut off.
That's the worst feeling.
It really is. And you feel completely invisible to society. In fact, like a part of you actively wants to be impossible to remember.
Oh, that's heavy.
Right. So what do you do with that? Well, you log on to a completely anonymous internet forum. You boot up some brightly colored wizard game from like 2008 just to numb your mind. And you sit there waiting for a 5-year-old to eventually grow up and save the world.
I mean, it sounds like the setup to some kind of dystopian sci-fi novel, but it's actually the lived reality for a very specific, very vocal internet subculture right now.
Yeah, and it tells us something incredibly profound about where our digital culture is heading. So, welcome to another deep dive. Today, we're exploring an archive from late 2025.
Yeah, we are looking at a highly chaotic, entirely anonymous image board thread. Specifically, this is the HSG board, which stands for Homestuck General, on a site called Mejidokken.
And, on the surface, if you just glance at this, you'd think, okay, it's just a forum for a webcomic.
Right, but when you actually read the text and unpack the conversations happening between these anonymous users, I mean, it transcends the webcomic completely.
Oh,
It
totally.
acts as this incredibly dense, fascinating microcosm of internet subculture, media critique, and this deep, almost paralyzing generational anxiety.
But before we really get into the psychology of this thread, we need to set some boundaries for you, the listener, about what we're actually looking at here.
Yeah, a mandatory disclaimer of sorts.
Exactly. Because this is an unfiltered, anonymous image board, the source material contains some highly polarized, extremely politically charged content.
Like very extreme.
Yeah, we're going to be analyzing an environment where explicit, edgy, right-wing rhetoric, which includes the casual use of slurs, is sitting right alongside intense left-wing, anti-capitalist rhetoric.
And we really need to be explicitly clear with you right up front. We take absolutely no sides here, and we do not endorse any of these viewpoints.
Hero sides.
Right. Our role today is strictly as impartial guides. We're simply conveying the ideas and the language contained in this original source material so we can understand the culture of the board. We aren't here to judge the politics. We're just here to decode the artifact.
Okay, let's unpack this. One of the most dominant themes threading through this entire archive is how this community consumes and honestly severely critiques modern media.
Oh, yeah. They are brutal.
And the clearest lens into that mindset is their relationship with video games. They don't just dislike the current state of gaming, they feel this profound, like, grieving frustration with the homogenization of entertainment.
They feel genuinely insulted by modern game design. You see this perfectly in how they talk about a massive, critically acclaimed modern title like Hades 2.
Right, which was universally praised by most people.
Exactly. But on this board, a user completely dismisses it as a repetitive roguelite.
And just for anyone who doesn't play them, a roguelite is a genre of game where you're expected to die repeatedly, right? You start over from the beginning, but you keep some small upgrades each time. The core loop is built around repetition.
Yeah, and this user's critique is that the game just forces you to play the same rooms and the same levels over and over, not to challenge your brain, but purely to drip-feed you arbitrary achievements.
It's just a treadmill.
Exactly. Contrast that with how the thread discusses an older, much more obscure game called Moon. They absolutely revere it.
Yeah, they love Moon specifically because of its ending. The game essentially tells the player to turn off the console, go outside, and talk to people in the real world.
Right, they appreciate that it's a piece of good fiction with a definitive end. It actually respects the player's time rather than mocking them for sitting inside playing video game or trapping them in some endless loop.
And this craving for respect from the media leads them into this massive debate about RPG mechanics. They use a truly fascinating term to describe what's happening to modern JRPGs like Persona 5. They claim the genre has become gentrified.
Gentrified. It's such a specific word choice.
Right. What they actually mean is that developers are stripping away the intense grind of older games, and they're adding like heavily stylized user interfaces.
And dating sim elements.
Yeah, exactly. They're doing this to trick non-RPG fans into playing. And, I have to play devil's advocate here. Why is making a game playable a bad thing to these users? Isn't that just classic internet gatekeeping?
What's fascinating here is that it looks like gatekeeping on the surface, but if you dig into the psychology of what they're actually mourning, it's about cognitive investment. It's about friction.
Okay, explain that.
So When they look back at an older game like Dragon Quest II, they praise its openness, the fact that you could just get completely lost. The game didn't hold your hand.
You had to figure it out yourself.
Right. You had to physically map things out in your head. It demanded something from you. When developers gentrify a game to appeal to everyone, they smooth out all those rough edges.
They remove the friction?
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
They replace the friction of discovery with a sleek menu that tells you exactly where to go. And when a piece of media asks nothing of your brain, you can't form a meaningful relationship with it.
You know, thinking about it, like, gentrification reminds me exactly of what happens to a great local coffee shop.
Oh, that's a great comparison.
Like, if you've ever had a messy, authentic local spot in your neighborhood, there's a certain friction to it. The chairs don't match. You have to decipher some weird handwritten menu. You might have to actually talk to a barista who's in a terrible mood.
Right. It's an actual experience.
Exactly. It creates a memory. But then a corporate chain buys the building. Suddenly, it's sleek. It's perfectly lit. You order your coffee by pressing a button on an app before you even walk in, so you never have to speak to another human being.
It's frictionless.
Frictionless, highly efficient, but it has absolutely no soul.
That is a perfect translation of their argument. And they apply this exact same logic to visual design, too. There's a whole section where they critique modern Pokemon designs.
Oh, the Newmon debate. I love this part.
Yeah, they dismissively call the newer generations Newmon. They argue that these modern creatures look like cheap, edgeless toys made out of slate plastic. And they actually bring in psychological theory to back this up.
The Kiki and Bobo shapes, right?
Exactly. For context, the Booba Kiki effect is a famous psychological experiment. If you show people two shapes, one that's sharp and jagged, and one that's rounded and blobby, and ask them which is named Kiki and which is Booba, almost everyone points to the sharp shape is Kiki and the round shape is Booba.
Because our brains naturally connect the sharp sound to the sharp shape.
Right. And what the users are arguing is that modern Newmon designs lack any nuance. They're just extreme, simplified versions of either entirely sharp Kiki shapes or entirely round Bobo shapes.
There's no texture. They compare these new, smooth designs to older Pokemon, like Clefable. Which Clefable is very round and pink, very Booba, but it has these little detailed spikes on its back.
And those weird little fingers.
Yes. The users call these tiny, unnecessary details Greebles, and they desperately miss the Greebles. They want the messy details back.
Because the Greebles represent an artist's distinct hand. You see this exact same craving when they debate indie puzzle games. They discuss Jonathan Blow, a famous indie developer, and his marketing of handcrafted puzzles versus procedural generation.
Procedural generation being when a computer algorithm builds the levels randomly, so there's no specific designer intent.
Right. They're desperately seeking out games that force true understanding, like Can of Wormholes or Patrick's Parabox.
Oh, those games are intense.
Yeah, you can't just use trial and error to bash your way to a win. You have to actually learn the underlying mathematical logic the developer created. They want to be challenged by a human mind.
Which makes total sense. But this frustration with modern media naturally bleeds into a resentment toward the creators themselves. And it turns into this incredibly dark, agonizing wait for promised content.
It's like the death grip of nostalgia. When you hate the modern landscape, you look backward at what you loved as a kid. But because you're older and more cynical, you aggressively scrutinize the people who built your childhood.
And scrutinize is putting it mildly. There is a massive multi-paragraph rant in this thread targeted at Matt Groening, the creator of The Simpsons.
Oh, yeah. They go in on him.
A user argues Groening has a literal death grip on the senses of humor and creative instincts of two generations. And they claim he achieved this using banal jokes he didn't even write.
They actively try to strip away his creative credit for the things they did love. They argue that all the wholesome elements, like the deeply human nature of a character like Ned Flanders, came from other writers, not Groening.
They want to believe the creator they idolized was actually a fraud.
Exactly. But this feeling of betrayal isn't just directed at mainstream creators. When we look at how they treat their own highly specific fandom Homestuck, we see that exact same resentment directed inward.
Yeah, they spend a huge chunk of the thread discussing the agonizing wait for a Homestuck spinoff game called Hiveswap Act 3. A poster reviews a 3-hour demo stream of it, and it essentially confirms all their worst fears about the gentrification of gaming.
It's brutal. They note that for the entire 3 hours, the player is essentially just walking around Jeevik's mansion, talking to fan trolls.
With zero puzzles, none. And to make it worse, the gameplay is entirely driven by a new mechanic called a clout meter.
Yeah, A clout meter.
Which, wait, what actually is a clout meter in this context?
It's exactly what it sounds like. Instead of solving a logic puzzle, your success is tied to a popularity score within the game's social system. You are commodifying your interactions to gain clout.
Oh, man.
It replaces actual gameplay with a social media simulator, which is the ultimate insult to a community that feels invisible in the real world.
And they also complain about the audio. Those entire 3 hours featured only two repeating music loops. One user notes, with this kind of exhausted despair, that the game is supposedly longer by word count, meaning it plays more like a visual novel than a game.
And the kicker. The planned release date is 2026.
Which feels like a lifetime away to them. This frustration over the music loops actually sparks a debate about the old Homestuck music team. They contrast the massive success of Radiation, which is Toby Fox, the guy who made Undertale, with other former musicians like Bowman.
Right. They actively debate whether they should try to bring Bowman and these older musicians back for indie projects, just to recapture that old sound.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, and I want you, the listener, to think about this, too. Is this intense hatred for Matt Groening genuinely about who wrote the jokes for Ned Flanders? Or is the rage about Hiveswap really just about a clout meter?
I see where you're going with this.
Like, is it genuinely about the art? Or is it a symptom of the posters projecting their own loss of innocence and changing tastes onto the creators they once idolized?
It is absolutely projection. When a piece of media defines your youth, you form a profound bond with the feeling that media gave you. You felt safe. You felt understood.
Yeah.
So when you reach adulthood and the creator releases something new that fails to give you that exact same magical feeling, it registers as a personal betrayal. They aren't actually mad about Groening's jokes. They're mad that they can't feel the way they did when they were 10 years old.
That makes so much sense. And that loss of feeling, that resentment, it's ultimately a mask for the core issue driving this community, which is a profound sense of generational malaise and displacement.
They are obsessed with defining themselves through generational labels.
Right. There's this intense debate about whether Homestuck's John Egbert is a millennial written as a Gen Xer.
Because he loves bad older movies.
Exactly. And conversely, they argue that the kids in Deltarune are Zoomers written as millennials. They're constantly trying to box these fictional characters and themselves into these strict generational categories.
And this search for identity happens against the backdrop of an incredibly intense, contradictory political atmosphere on the board.
Yeah, as we mentioned at the start, the whiplash of the rhetoric is severe.
It oscillates wildly. On one hand, you have users espousing very earnest, left-wing Gen Z values. They advocate for social democracy, the Green New Deal, anti-capitalism.
But then, literally in the same breath, the tone shifts into explicit, edgy right-wing extremism. They discuss the war in Ukraine with this heavy cynicism. They make anti-trans 41% jokes, and they use outright racial slurs.
It is total rhetorical chaos.
But wait, what if this extreme political posturing on both the far left and the far right is essentially just another form of fandom for them? Like, are they just role-playing? Because it feels like an exhausted generation desperate to feel something.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's definitely performative armor. When you look at the extreme shock value of the politics alongside their desperate need to retreat into childhood video games, it paints a very clear picture of a generation paralyzed by the future.
Because they openly talk about their physical and mental reality, this is where the lightning brain overthinking comes in. They rely on sleep gummies just to stop their brains at night.
And one user expresses that incredibly dark desire you mentioned at the start. They say they want to be impossible to remember.
Impossible to remember. It's such a devastating phrase. And to cope with that, they numb their brains with nostalgia. They play Wizard 101 or old Crash Bandicoot levels just to shut out the noise.
Which brings us to the concept of 2032 core.
Okay, yes. We have to unpack 2032 core.
So many of the posters feel that at age 30, they are already too old. They believe they've missed their chance to shape the culture.
So they project it all into the future.
Exactly. They believe the next great cultural wave, something with the optimism of Y2K, won't happen until the year 2032.
But the craziest part is who they think will lead it. They explicitly state that the leader of this next cultural renaissance has to be someone who is currently a 5-year-old child.
It is a total abdication of agency. By deciding a kindergartner is the only one who can save the internet, they remove all responsibility from themselves. They use anonymity as a shield against a real world they feel entirely unequipped to handle.
Wow. So what does this all mean? We started this deep dive looking at an archive of an anonymous image board thread about a webcomic. But it really acts as a mirror, reflecting the homogenization of media, the resentment of childhood heroes, and the deep, paralyzing angst of the perpetually online.
And bringing it back to you, the listener. Even if you've never visited an anonymous image board, everyone experiences the friction of growing older. Everyone watches their favorite media change and feels overwhelmed by the relentless pace of the modern internet.
We've all had a touch of that lightning brain.
Exactly. We all want to retreat to that messy local coffee shop sometimes.
We really do.
Yeah.
And it makes me think, you know, we usually view these anonymous internet forums as temporary digital trash. But centuries from now, when digital historians look back at our era, will they look at our curated, sanitized social media feeds? Mm. Or will they view these messy, offensive, deeply vulnerable image board threads as the truest, most unfiltered psychological diaries of the 21st century?